Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com coming to you on the 9th of March, 2012. And it's my honor to be joined on the line today by Russell Tice, a former intelligence analyst for the U.S. Air Force, the Office of Naval Intelligence, the DIA, and the NSA, the National Security Agency, who is probably best known in recent years for his blowing the whistle on the Bush administration's domestic electronic spying program during the middle and early part of the last decade. Russ Tice, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, this is our first conversation, so perhaps we can start by introducing yourself and some of your background for the listeners and talk a little bit about your time in the various agencies as an intelligence analyst.
Well, I started out in the intel field when I got out of college, and I joined up with the Air Force, and I wanted to be an F-15 pilot, but they said I was too big and ugly to fit in the cockpit of a fighter plane. So, and basically, I went into the intelligence field instead. So, heartbroken about being basically jilted by the love of my life, which is still an F-15. I delved into the intel business and have been doing that sort of thing, that work, ever since, you know, the little squabbles we had with NSA here a few years ago. But from there, I traveled the world in the intel business. I was there in Japan for a while. I was all over the world, actually. You know, the Air Force said they'd send me around the world, and they actually did a few times. So I got out of the Air Force and came to work at the National Security Agency, and had sort of bounced around. But everything I did, even when I was working with the Navy and when I worked while in the Air Force and then ultimately with other organizations, the DIA, I was normally always connected and or had an office at NSA at Fort Meade, Maryland. So... And I also worked with the National Reconnaissance Office too, which is in Virginia. So, but still, I was always normally the liaison with NSA, if not working at NSA.
And how many years were you involved in one form or another in intelligence analysis for the U.S. Government?
20 years. 20 years.
So during that time, I mean, did you see the nature and the shape of the things that were going on in the intelligence analysis world changing with the technology, but also with the administrations as they continue to change?
Well, when I first went into the business in the Air Force, it was Ronald Reagan was the president, and a push was to, you know, to thwart the evil empire, Soviet Union. And we were at that point trying to, I guess the Reagan administration was trying to make up for losing a lot of money in the intel business from the Carter administration. So money was flowing, and we were very busy fighting the evil empire. In subsequent years, things slowed down. Of course, the evil entity turned into the wall fell down in Berlin, and everybody was happy. But ultimately, we found that all the little squabbles that the Cold War had basically put a damper on, you know, situations in the Balkans and other tribal and clannish rivalries flared up, and we found ourselves that whole peace dividend sort of did not really matriculate. So we had a lot of business after that, just trying to keep track of. You know, what ancient clan had, stolen somebody's property or killed someone's great-great-grandfather, and that has flared up into some issue somewhere around the world. But it's always interesting.
Well, of that, I have absolutely no doubt. But let's transition. What I wanted to get you on today to talk about specifically was something, a story that's been on the tip of everyone's tongues for the last month or so, talking about the Stratfor emails and the WikiLeaks release thereof. talking about 5 million emails that were harvested from the headquarters of the global intelligence company Stratfor. So perhaps we can start by talking a little bit about this concept itself of a global intelligence company. Obviously, you were employed by the U.S. government itself, but what is the concept here, and what kind of customers would a private company like this actually have?
Well, it's not uncommon. Even in my field, I knew that there are companies that do business overseas that have legitimate need for certain types of intelligence, particularly counterinsurgencies and that sort of thing. And say you're in South America and you're in the fruit business, and you want to make sure that some government in some battling insurgency and that involves drugs or whatever isn't going to destroy your business profits. So there's a need for intelligence in the private sector. Kind of what I'm finding disturbing is the fact that if what I'm reading is true, that Stratfor is basically co-opting legitimate intelligence government sources for information, and with I assume the promise that there's a revolving door that will lead to a lucrative career after their government careers are done.
Now, in your time, in your service, did you see anything like this happening? Did you see any of the type of headhunting that the implication is out there was happening with Stratfor and other companies like that going on with some of your colleagues?
Well, I mean, I worked with and for companies that that were doing government contracts, contract work, but they certainly weren't for private industry. This would be, NSA needs this, and they recruit, one of the big military DoD contractors to help them with particularly the technology. And this was very prevalent, especially with the NRO, the National Reconnaissance Office, where a lot of the expertise is provided by experts, technical experts in the private industry. Of course, very secret. These contractors have secret, top secret and higher clearances. I really didn't get a lot of or see a lot of information flowing to private corporations that needed to know. In the one case, Coca-Cola wanted information supposedly in that one report. I really didn't see a whole lot of that kind of information flow to companies like that. Although I can see where, like I said, some companies have need of information just to keep their assets safe.
Well, as you intimated earlier, it's disturbing, I think, is the most obvious adjective that comes to mind, to think about some of the what some of the emails have revealed about the way that this company was cultivating sources and the type of sources they were cultivating. Is there anything that sticks out to you from what you've seen so far about the specific emails that you've seen or anything that that has come out so far from the Stratfor leaks that particularly grabs your attention?
Well, the fact that supposedly, if these things are for real, that they're co-opting intelligence officers in the government actively that are giving this information to Stratfor, and that they're using this information to leverage certain things or certain people, I find that very disturbing. Everyone says, oh, yeah, I'm a whistleblower, and, I was a source of information. I was a source of information and for something that was highly illegal the government was doing. The government has a legitimate reason to do intelligence work that's viable for our national security. And the fact that information is being given up for profit to some company, and ultimately with a wink and a nod saying, hey, if you want a job for us, we'll offer you two or three times your salary now. I find that, disturbing.
Well, given that these emails were actually hacked out of the server and were acquired through, I'm sure, less than above board means, is there any other recourse that the public has, given how completely out of the loop they are in this regard. I mean, is there any other recourse other than hacking into the servers of these companies to try to keep some sort of watchdog status on the ways that the intelligence community is interacting with these privatized companies?
You know, ultimately, these agencies themselves are supposed to have security measures with their networks, firewalls set up to make sure that these things don't happen. Now, of course, this is a private company we're talking about, so the government can't demand to see their firewall, but I would think at least the reputation of this company itself, the fact that they allowed themselves to be hacked, and tens of thousands of their emails copied, is just a little bit embarrassing for the company itself that's supposed to tout themselves as being security experts.
Well, I think quite obviously this undermines any claim they have in that arena. But I guess back on the issue of the bigger picture, obviously there have been exposés written in recent years about the growth of the privatization of intelligence generally, and the way that intelligence is increasingly being outsourced to these types of companies that ultimately are not really accountable to the American people, only to their shareholders. I mean, what does this really say about the future of intelligence? And do you think that there is anything that's likely to put the brakes on this trend towards using these types of private companies for the collection of this intelligence?
Well, ultimately, we go back to the revolving door. I mean, people like Michael Hayden, as soon as they get out of being director of NSA/CIA, they go right to the the bosom of the private industry that's involved, where they themselves, as he himself says, general, was awarding these contracts, and now he's making, millions of dollars in the same arena where he was, giving contracts to his friends. How do you stop this sort of thing? I mean, ultimately, you have to pass some laws and you have to have some oversight to make sure these things don't happen within the agencies themselves and with Congress. And within the executive branch. But is that sort of thing, forthcoming in what we've seen in the last few years and in what I've seen? That's not coming anytime soon. So it's going to have to be independent journalists like yourself and other people that are, of course, the mainstream media is willingly put their head in the sand on issues like this. So it's going to have to be people educating the American citizenry about what's going on and trying to spark some kind of outrage to get something done about this.
Well, unfortunately, I think you're right to be pessimistic about the chances of any type of political solution happening to this anytime in the near future, especially because, to my mind, what this harkens back to is, for example, Cheney as Secretary of Defense under the first Bush presidency, basically contracting the study out to a Halliburton-owned company to investigate whether or not it would be in the interests of the U.S. Department of Defense to start doing more contract work with companies. And then, of course, he goes and transitions from Secretary of Defense to head of Halliburton and then back to vice president. And that's a perfect example of the revolving door and how the contracting eventually works. So I think, it's kind of a catch-22. There's no way out of it because the people who are in the positions to make the changes are the very ones who are in the position to make money out of further privatizing the industry itself.
That's right. And if they bite the hand that will in the future that will feed them, then they know, they could be in trouble. I mean, ultimately, it's sort of like asking the Fox to do a report on whether the Brotherhood of Foxes should be involved in guarding all the hen houses in the realm. Of course, the Fox will probably come out with an analytical report saying that it's a great thing to have the Brotherhood of Foxes guarding the hen houses. almost of a fait accompli, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, what's your take on the WikiLeaks aspect of this? Of course, being released by WikiLeaks and Julian Assange in London awaiting his extradition and still going through all of that hoopla. And of course, this this release coming, like so many of the other WikiLeaks releases, in bits and bytes through arranged release of information with the media, and more information coming out now about an elaborate embargo that WikiLeaks had on information from certain countries that wasn't allowed to be released by the media partners at a certain time. Quite an elaborate system that they have in place. And again, it almost boggles the mind to think that the U.S. government would be unable to understand or to shut down WikiLeaks and its operations if they were truly trying to go after it. I don't know what to make of it, but what's your take on the WikiLeaks position in all of this?
You know, I don't know what to make of WikiLeaks either. They certainly, in my opinion, they have not been very responsible. And if they're above board in their wish to bring out information that's criminal, and like the if this private Manning was involved, the helicopter video where the guys come to pick up bodies, you know, and then the helicopter crew just blows the guys away that are there to help people that are injured, that is a blatant war crime, and sure, showing that is definitely something that the people need to see. But some of the other things that they've released, especially when they release it in mass and tens of hundreds of thousands of emails just in some big, you know, sort of mass splatter without basically vetting, you know, there could be information in there that could get someone hurt. They haven't been responsible. They haven't made life easy for legitimate whistleblowers, and the whole WikiLeaks thing is being used as a standard war cry on Capitol Hill to go after all whistleblowers. So they're really not helping the legitimate whistleblower, and they seem to have some kind of an agenda of their own that they're following. I'm not sure what that is. But yeah, I'm kind of mystified as to what's going on there as well.
Well, unfortunately, I think we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, it's still a developing story, but the Atlantic Wire had a report about their embargo on the Stratfor emails, talking about, you know, certain countries could be talked about on certain days by media partners and things like that. It's just it's a very elaborate and bizarre system for setting up these kind of leaks in drips and drabs, but you mentioned the whistleblower situation, and obviously this is something that pertains to yourself and that you're obviously concerned with. Perhaps you can speak to the Obama administration and its track record on dealing with whistleblowers.
Well, I mean, I was a lifelong Republican until just a couple of years ago when I finally had enough, became an independent, but. I mean, I voted for Obama, the first Democrat I ever voted for in my life, basically on his promise that he was going to have openness in government, that he was going to basically have whistleblower laws and to protect whistleblowers that were, you know, bringing forth, you know, fraud and abuse and crimes that was happening within the government. And I think, you know, I fell for it, just like a lot of other folks fell for it. And you know, what we have is a president who's gone after more whistleblowers than all the other presidents combined. We have a situation, there's no openness in government. We have a president whose attorney general has just made some kind of lame excuse that the president can assassinate American citizens without judicial due process. And he supposedly a law professor from Illinois. I
just
shake my head and you know,
it almost like makes you think that he wasn't interested in actually upholding the Constitution.
You know, my first hint about that was in summer of 2008 when he voted along with the okay, now we're going to let NSA do mass overseas wiretapping of American citizens, and we're going to give immunity to all the private comms companies that insist they've done nothing wrong and have broken no laws. So Senator Obama, you know, voted to give these people retroactive immunity. And to let the at least let some of the rabid dogs at NSA loose. That was my first indication that this guy might not be serious about what he's saying. After that, I was kind of hopefully optimistic, you know. But ultimately, you know, in Pandora's box, the only thing that was left was hope. So that's what we have, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately so. A pocket full of it and no change in every single manner of speaking, unfortunately. Well, it's interesting that you've gravitated from Republican to independent. Perhaps you can tell us about that political transformation and where you stand today.
With ultimately what happened to me, it was sort of definitely a sea change in my own thought. Where I was the conservative kid who would defend, you know, the government, and you know, we're wave the flag, and we're defending democracy against the world, and we are the, you know, like Reagan said, the beacon or the lighthouse that all countries will emulate. And I mean, I believed it, hook, line, and sinker. I was out there thinking I was fighting the good war, the good fight for democracy, and then I find out that NSA is spying on everybody. Total violation of their own regulations, a violation of the law, and violation of our Constitution. And the attitudes of a lot of people in the intel community was, so what? If they decide to put a classification on something, no matter how illegal it is or unconstitutional, then it's okay, because hey, you know, we've classified it. I was dumbstruck. I think it was sort of like just having a piano fall on my head. And ultimately, with everything that I went through, trying to internally and trying to go to the IGs and deal with Congress and everything else, you realize that the chain of command and the whole apparatus for oversight is nothing but a mechanism to give themselves a warning of what's coming so that they can wrap the chain around your throat to choke you to death with, or to head off, any negative publicity that might be heading their way. And that's what I found out, that the system is rigged against you, and there's no right or wrong. They don't care. They do whatever they want to do. So I guess now I'm my naivete of my youth has been jaded, and now I'm sort of I don't know. It's sort of like a virgin whose prom dress is somewhere in the back seat. You know what I mean?
I understand. Unfortunately, I understand, because it's a story that we've heard all too often from so many different whistleblowers on this program that we've talked to in the past, where they've come to that realization that all of the mechanisms that they've been provided to quote-unquote blow the whistle are really just used against them to kind of gather intelligence about what it is they know and what they can expose in order to better deal with them. And of course, we've seen that with people like Sybil Edmonds and others who have gone through the exact same process. And it really does beg the question, because you mentioned that there is, or we could at least imagine, a situation in which there is a legitimate national security issue in intelligence collection and intelligence analysis. But when this national security state becomes created and it starts to function on its own in a certain way, I mean, there's nothing that can really rein that in if the people who are in charge of that are intent on breaking the law and flaunting regulation.
That's correct. And, you know, ultimately, NSA will be the lifeblood of that monster that's being created. It's going to be information, and NSA literally now has the keys to everyone's telephone, everyone's cell phone, everyone's fax machine. Every communication device you have, NSA has an access to it domestically within this country. And they still have that to this day. To what extent our current president is using that, I don't know. Things have really tightened down inside the agency as far as you know, who knows what. But even if this guy was says, oh, well, I'm not going to abuse my power, but he's expanding the power of all this. What about the next guy? What about the next president? Or what about the three of them down the line? What if one of them wants to decide that they're going to be a despot and they're going to declare themselves king of the United States? They have the apparatus already in place to basically make sure that the dissent will not rise to put them down.
That is a very sobering assessment, and unfortunately, I think all too true. But of course, it leaves us in the position of the average man and woman out there wondering what on earth we can do to combat this mechanism that's been put into place that has all of this power. Is there any way to rein it in? Is there anything the average person out there can be doing to put more pressure to try to put controls on this incredible technological power that the government, at least theoretically, has over the people?
Well, the first thing they need to do is wake up. You know, they need to, to realize that the water's about to boil and need to hop out of the pot. To our citizenry, if you've read Orwell, 1984, the populace is placated by massive amounts of alcohol and pornography. So, think about that. You know, we have these silly TV shows and these little dingling girls running around, you know, that everyone follows. And no one seems to care what's happening in their country. The National Defense, the Authorization Act, that now says, that they can... they can lock anybody up in the country, declare anything a battleground, and throw away the key, any U.S. citizen. And the mainstream media doesn't even cover that? And the people are too busy, the few that do, it's not being picked up, and the people are too busy watching their silly, Britney Spears or Lindsay Lohan or whatever the ding-a-ling of the month escapade is. The people themselves, if they don't wake up, it's going to be too late. Benjamin Franklin said that it's up to the citizenry to defend their constitution. Otherwise, we'll lose our democracy. We'll lose our republic. And I see us losing our republic because the people have their head in the sand.
Well, that's a message that I certainly share and attempt to spread on my program as well, that it really is in the hands of the people to understand what's going on in the first place, let alone to even think about what to do about that. But absolutely right. So finally, before we leave you today, back on the subject of the privatization of intelligence, it strikes me that it's not just simply a question of subcontracting certain things out. There has to be a certain amount of complicity between the U.S. intelligence apparatus and the corporations which are implementing the technology, like one would imagine Microsoft and Apple and the creators of the operating software of these systems that obviously have to be in compliance with certain standards. And there are different ways in which companies of that ilk have to be in compliance with various orders from the U.S. government. What can you speak to that way in which corporations are really in lockstep with the government on so many of these programs that are being implemented?
Well, I mean, you think about it, these technologies are the government buys, how many operating systems and licenses does the government buy, worth how many millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, and technical systems and security systems and equipment and encryption systems and all these sort of things. So the government and corporation are in lockstep because it's a financial a symbiotic relationship where both benefit. I mean, then the companies basically give the government carte blanche access to everything that they have, backdoors into their databases, into their data systems into their operating systems, into backdoors, into encryption systems. It's they don't even have to get a court order. They just say, hey, we want this, and they have a direct line already set up to just feed that information to them electronically, you know, at the drop of a hat. So, you know, it's an incestuous relationship. And it ultimately does not bode well for, you know, for privacy and our civil liberties.
It certainly does not. And once again, it's something that the public can affect by what they use their pocketbook for. If you continue to support the companies that are involved in this, then you get what you pay for in so many respects. And if you support the open software movement and things like that, you can actually affect a change in the types of software and things that are being placed into your own computer hardware.
You know, how many people that use their, you know, their new iPad, their iPhone, their whatever. How many people think about the information they're putting on there and the access they're giving to the potential the government or companies snooping, collecting, what have you? It seems to me most people are too busy tweeting or texting or whatever to really think about what they're doing.
Or even going on Foursquare or other such things to let people know in real time exactly where they are, who they're meeting with, and what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, the GPSing of a phone. If you don't want that to happen, you either take the battery out, or you have to put it in some kind of a lead or a brass thread lined pocket or something. But everything today is being set up so it's very easy for the government to get what they want. Automobiles are being set up with these OnStar systems that can be turned on whether you like it or not. So, and all kinds of other things and technologies are being incorporated with tracking systems. Or the information, you know, the text information, you know, being derived right from your phone and being put in Lord knows what database. So all these things are happening, and the American people are just blissfully, doing their thing and they're not even conscious of the ramifications of what they're doing.
Well, unfortunately, once again, you're right about that. But once again, that's a terrible spot to leave this conversation in. So perhaps we can end it with this question. Russell Tice, what do you do personally in your own everyday life when it comes to your personal information to try to protect yourself from that type of falling into the habit of giving this information in a very easy and compatible form for whatever agency might be interested in looking at it?
I mean, I carry a cell phone too, but I find myself sometimes, you know, if I'm going to talk to someone, and oh, by the way, this conversation we're having now is being intercepted by the National Security Agency, whether you know it or not. I think I may have alluded to that. But so they're listening in on us right now in real time, and this is being recorded, digitized, and it will be put in a database for Lord knows how many years into the future. But I do little things like, I pull this, you know, the battery out of my cell phone sometimes when I'm going to talk to somebody in the press one little story. When I was being actively followed by the FBI, I was going through cell phones, the throwaway cell phones. I've probably been through 80 of these things, and I knew they were tracking the cell phone. So I went to a truck stop, and I probably shouldn't have done this because Lord knows they probably think I was putting a bomb. But I used duct tape, and I duct taped the cell phone to the back of a tractor trailer at a truck stop, and I don't know where it was headed, hopefully to California or something. So they would think that I was on my way to Lord knows where. So I've done silly little things like that sometimes. I used to leave little, when they were following me around, I'd leave messages in tin cans like I was leaving it for Boris Sabanoff and Natasha. And then I'd watch them from a distance, could pick up the can, and I'd leave little messages for them. So in some ways, I've played around with them, but it gets old after a while.
It does, I suppose, but we must maintain our sanity somehow, even if it's through things like that. But I certainly think that can, in fact, be a type of strategy in terms of putting garbage information out there to at least make it more difficult for them to sort through the morass of information to get to the golden nuggets. So I've heard of people doing things like constantly putting up false information on Facebook and things like that to try to just throw those monkey wrenches into the works. Do you think that's actually a valuable thing to do?
Oh, absolutely. Anyone who puts all their real data on one of these social network sites is crazy. You put your real birth date and your real mother's maiden name and your real this and that, and before you know it, someone's got your bank account and everything is being drained out of it. I would say it's not illegal to lie to a private company. Lie to them. Don't tell them the truth. I mean, your friends know who you are. Your friends know that you're from this town or whatever. You don't have to tell, XYZ company that you're from there. And if they're not your friends, the hell with them anyhow. So, I would say lie. Lie to companies that are asking for your information. It's not illegal to lie to a private company. Now, don't do that on a government form or your passport, application, because there's then they can throw you in jail for 5 years on government forms. But anything else, make stuff up.
Exactly, right. So for the purposes of the NSA who are listening into this conversation, my name is Tina, and I live in Timbuktu. Of course, for everyone else, I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and we've been talking to Russ Tice. So, Russ, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you so much for sharing your time today.
No worries. Take care.